What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Nightmares Podcast, where we talk about all things horror, going exclusively to guests, where we discuss movies, music, television shows, filmmaking, whatever we want. And we have, of course, my partner in crime, Mr. Zachary Smith, is here.
Yo.
And we also have Sean Wright. If you would be so kind to introduce yourself, good sir.
How's it going? I'm Sean Wright. I'm a writer, director, producer. I just released my first feature film, Night of the Axe, late last year.
Nice, nice. So, hey, thank you so much for being on with us. We just start off with a simple question, which is, when did horror enter your life?
From a young age, horror probably entered my life, because I have always been interested in sort of spooky kind of stuff when I was younger. You know, I was into, like, Goosebumps and stuff like that when I was real young. And, like, when I got a little older, I really got into, like, you know, the classic horror movies. You know, I started to watch the slashers around Halloween time when, you know, AMC would play them. Basically my teenage years, I really got into it, and it just snowballed from there. I just, just wanted to find more cool horror movies, you know.
Nice, nice. I know a lot of people started off with Goosebumps and Are You Afraid of the Dark? If you're any product of the 90s, you definitely got. I mean, Zach and I used to, for fun, like, watch the old episodes of Goosebumps just to decompress, because sometimes, I mean, sometimes it could be really, you know, it could be fun, and sometimes they're just really laughably bad. I do know that I think the Monster Blood one, especially number two, is still one of my personal favorites of just fun bad. The whole thing with the airplane and the kids going from side to side, it was always fucking hilarious.
That's the most unrealistic plane I've ever seen.
Oh,
in my
dude,
life.
It's incredibly, it's insanely unrealistic. Like, I've been in traveling my whole life. Like, that, no, those things aren't connected at all. The overhead luggage compartment, they're never connected. No kid can walk in between. And that plane was so fucking old, it still had the ashtrays in, like, the center. It was like a 70s baller plane that, like, you know, the Playboy Mansion probably owned in the late 1970s. But it was entertaining. It was definitely entertaining. And then you had the bad ones like Chillology, that were just painfully bad. And then other ones that were uncomfortable, like I think the old story where those old ladies were trying to fucking, like, find new husbands, and they made those, like, young kids, like, really old, so they can be, like, make them their husbands.
That one was weird.
Yeah, that one was uncomfortable. I was like, you old ladies are just fucking perverted, is what you are. That you're trying to kidnap children and like, sell them into, like bridals, or in this case, husband slavery.
Yeah, that's a little strange. Yeah, I haven't seen Goosebumps in so long. I watched it, like, not too long ago, not too long ago, probably like 10 years ago or so. I watched some of the Goosebumps again. And Are You Afraid of the Dark? I watched. Yeah, some of them. Yeah, every show is hit or miss.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Absolutely.
Any show is hit or miss. Especially a children's TV show.
Yeah, Canadian children's television show that just, you know, that swapped actors all the time. But Are You Afraid of the Dark, though, kind of always felt like we were kind of getting away with something. Because, like, I think a lot of them had a lot more quality horror, you know, for the time, and a lot more quality stories, and it was genuinely creepy. Like, I think somebody made, like a good analogy about Goosebumps is wanting Goosebumps to be scary is like wanting Scooby-Doo to be scary. It's kind of not the point.
Right.
And I'm like, yeah, that's a pretty good fucking analogy. But Are You Afraid of the Dark, though, like, you know, had some legitimate atmosphere and legitimate, like, creepy tones, especially for being a kid show.
Production value.
Yeah.
Production value.
Yeah. She actually had a budget and didn't look like the sets were done out of cardboard, like early Star Trek. Do you remember anything in particular that you really enjoyed from Are You Afraid of the Dark?
The intro with them around the fire is really the most memorable thing. It's like that creepy vibe just sets the episode. You know,
I hear you.
You know that
shit they put in the fire is actually non-dairy coffee creamer, because that shit's flammable.
Really?
Yeah. I love how Disney did that, but, like, they also had a requirement on the show that they could not show the kids making the fire because they did not want to educate children on how to start a fire.
Yeah, can't have that.
No, that's a legitimate concern by them and everything else. Was there any episodes in particular that you remember that really stuck out for you?
I remember there being some sort of like alien in a fun house. I don't remember exactly which one. Again, it's been a long time since I watched them. I was like young, but I just remember like there's like an alien in a fun house or like a circus or something. I don't know. It was weird. That's one thing I really remember from that show. I can see it in my head, but I can't tell you the details of what's going on. I can just see like the weird guy in like a room of mirrors or something with some kids.
Fair enough.
That really sticks out for me. It's been, like I said, it was a long time ago. Speaking of,
go ahead.
You mentioned Scooby-Doo. That was another one of my, my sort of intros into the horror genre and the spooky like monsters and stuff. Scooby-Doo is always a big love of mine. Especially like Scooby-Doo and Zombie Island. That's like peak Scooby.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
That movie is a classic.
You know, we haven't really talked about Scooby-Doo all that much on this show. I think we, a lot of times we just go straight for Are You Afraid of the Dark and Goosebumps, and then occasionally, you know, Courage the Cowardly Dog, but like really don't like mess around in Scooby-Doo. You know, did you watch Scooby-Doo growing up?
Very casually.
Okay. Well, yeah, you have one friend though that's like super fucking into it though.
Oh yeah, my brother Matt, he fucking loves it. Like that's like one of his all-time favorite shows. Still loves it to this day. Not too happy with the current trend of Scooby-Doo. He hasn't been a fan of the modern stuff for, I'd say, maybe the past like 5 or 6 years, or I could be wrong on that. But yeah, for the most part, dude loves it.
Yeah, I remember like passively enjoying it. I remember, obviously, I think I loved the Scooby-Doo live action one. And I think it's still actually kind of great.
Really need to rewatch those movies.
Dude, it's actually I gotta be honest, it's kind of fucking great. Like it's very entertaining.
I'm sure they're a product of their time.
Oh, it's definitely like Sugar Ray's there. Like, you know, it's very 2003. Like, and they're like a character in it. Like it's something.
I enjoy both those live action Scooby movies. I don't know anything beyond 1 and 2, but those two were good.
Yeah, well, no, I mean,
I don't think anybody went beyond 1 or 2.
No, I didn't even know there was anything beyond 1 or 2.
I think there's 4 now.
Jesus. If it doesn't have Matthew Lillard or Freddie Prinze Jr. in it, I don't want any part of it.
It doesn't.
Then I don't want any part of it. I'm good. I know it's definitely a product of like 2003. Like, you know, just some of the shit, man. Like, you know, the bitch was like, what? And I was like, later on. It's, oh God, so fucking funny. Yo dog and dog. We got what, butt crazy last night, and that things got wild, and then everything calmed down. It was kind of like, what? You know what I mean? Shaggy's like, no. No, I don't know what you mean.
I really need to rewatch this movie.
Oh yeah, it is a lot of fun. So when did filmmaking enter your life? You know, when did that start to become a thing for you?
So it was probably like 2018 or so. I had thought about it for quite a while, you know, because when I started really getting into horror movies, I was like, you know, I could really make a really cool horror movie because, you know, I have like the sort of spooky, creepy, gory, violent ideas that I want to bring to life. So like 2018, I finally just sat down and said, let's do it. You know? So I went made my first short film, Night of the Axe, which is, you know, the feature obviously is what just came out. But I made a short film of that first. And then, you know, about a year later or so, I released my second short film, Spirit Board Doorway to Death. And I finally decided to do a feature, you know, shortly after that. And that took me like 3 years. due to various delays, you know, pandemic, all that sort of stuff.
Sure.
Yeah, it's sort of, I just, Yeah, sorry.
No, go ahead and continue, please.
No, that's about all I have.
Oh, okay. Cool. That's fun too. Obviously horror is a big influence on you. So tell us about the shorts, because I didn't see anything about the shorts. I only obviously knew that you were trying to promote your feature. So I'm curious about, going into more detail about the shorts. You said you did two of them, correct?
Yes, the first one was Night of the Axe, like I said. It's the same basic concept as the feature. A masked killer who escaped from a mental asylum. He goes to a house party, sort of house party thing, and he kills off the inhabitants of the house one by one. Mm-hmm. Very classic by the book slasher kind of thing. Taking some influences from Friday the 13th and Halloween. And then the second one, Spirit Board, Doorway to Death, that's about a group of friends. They play up a Ouija board. They actually summon forth the spirit of a long dead serial killer, and he comes back and he kills them all. So both slashers, Spirit Board more of the supernatural slasher side. A lot of fun, a lot of gore, blood, a little sleazy, a little fun.
Fair enough. Is that one of your favorite subgenres of horror slashers?
Yeah, definitely. It's definitely one of my favorites. You could do a lot for slasher. It could just be sort of basic, by the numbers. You can add supernatural elements. You can make it funny. You can do all kinds of stuff to it.
Just make it fun.
You definitely want to make it enjoyable and fun. I'm always a big proponent of, because we're filmmakers on here, we like to learn from each other and everything else. I know that I think pre-production, post-production, and actual production are always good places to start when it comes to talking about features and kind of getting an idea. Walk us through pre-production for you. Talk about the writing process and how long does it take you to get written and up to snuff, and then we'll go from there.
I'd say the writing process really didn't take you that long. Maybe a couple. This is quite a while ago, so I don't remember the exact details of how long it took me to write. I just remember I wrote it at some point.
Fair enough.
Obviously. It probably took me a month, maybe, I don't know. And getting all the parts together, what exactly, do you want me to go through the casting process?
Yeah, absolutely. I always love hearing about all of it when it comes to the pre-production and the whole process, really.
So we actually cast the film. We actually did Zoom for casting.
Okay.
The pandemic was actually helpful in that method, because we didn't have a venue to hold auditions. I didn't have that kind of money. So I cast, I had auditions for a little while. I did it over Zoom. It was very easy. I'll probably do that forever. I don't see why I have to cast anyone in person anymore. You know what I mean? With technology.
Fair enough.
Zoom, self-tapes. So I had some issues with getting my special effects artist on board. Unfortunately, he had some other obligations that came up, so he actually couldn't be on board for the feature. So I had to sort of replace him shortly after we started production.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually had replaced with one actress, a great actress and special effects artist by the name of Angel Bradford. She did the special effects for the film. Yeah, do you have any?
No, for sure. I definitely let you go. So obviously when you're walk us through the audition process, because every director kind of has their own modus operandi when they're auditioning for people. Especially this is something that you, if research is clear, you also wrote this. So obviously you got a pretty clear vision about what you want to do. When it comes to the casting of everybody, what's your process of how you you know, get through these people, pick the right people, and really hone in on who you want.
I was looking for people who, a lot of personality shine through their reading, because everyone got, you know, aside from the script, you know, a short little scene that, you know, me and my friend Wade, who's also a producer, he was there with me to help cast as well. And we all read back and forth, and it was more of a personality thing. Like, you know, if they, you know, gave a little extra than just reading the lines, you know, because, you know, when you have sort of indie actors, I don't want to say they're not good. I just want to say, you know, it's like you're looking for someone with a little oomph, you know what I mean?
Sure.
And I definitely found that with my cast. I was very happy with the people I got. They were great. Being able to improv was very nice too. I had great luck of finding good actors who were able to do that. They really brought a lot to the movie, because, you know, some of that dialogue is completely improvised, which is great.
Okay.
Yeah, if you read my script, there's definitely stuff that's not in there. And I like that, because honestly, I'm not a great dialogue guy. I'm not great with dialogue. I'm better with the killing and the stuff like that.
The axe.
Yeah, with the X. But yeah, so I definitely like to work with actors who are open to sort of improvising and stuff like that. That's very helpful to me.
Fair enough, going with the flow and you know, and kind of moving along. So you know, when it comes to, you know, having people on, you know, on set, you know, what do you do with? I'm always fascinated with directors and how they work with their DPs. You know, when you're planning out things, is it kind of a spur of the moment type of deal, or do you plan stuff with your DP? You know, how does that work with the relationship with the two of you?
So I actually only had a DP for for a couple scenes, and okay, then I took over those duties myself.
Okay.
Because he had scheduling issues as well, but I can tell you that it was actually sort of spur of the moment thing. I didn't plan a lot. I probably should have planned a little more. I would have liked to maybe get a better shot list down.
Okay.
But I sort of just winged it for the most part. Like, I was just like, all right, this is the scene that I want to do. Let's just sort of go through the script, make sure to get everything, and just see what happens, what I can do, you know? Like, what, because the set we worked with was, the main set we worked with was an Airbnb, a house. So I basically just, I didn't really know the house too much when I wrote the script. So I just sort of had to go for it as I was there, and just sort of, you know, come up with ideas on the fly for how to sort of frame things and like what rooms to use and whatnot.
So now, okay, so we can move with production. You know, how long did the whole shoot take?
Well, so actually, I filmed it over the course of about 2 years or so.
Oh wow!
Because of, like I said, various delays, scheduling problems, pandemic issues, that sort of thing. So I probably, let's see, I think I started in late 2020. And I released it last December. Okay. So I was probably filming up until, I think I might have filmed something in like early 2022 or something like that. I think.
Okay.
So yeah, it was like a 2 year process to get everything filmed. Obviously we filmed the bulk of it together, like the stuff in the main house. That was all like over a couple weekends, you know. The shot in the backyard near the beginning, that was like a day. Like the stuff in the asylum, which was actually a church. Asylum, that was like 2 days we shot in. Like it was like, I would say that overall it was only probably like 10 days tops, but it was like I said, over the course of like 2 years because of various problems, because, you know, this isn't my full-time job.
Sure. No, it's none of my full-time jobs. Don't worry about it. We all do.
Dude, I know someone who's been working on their feature for the past 5 years. I'm rooting for him, but
he'll get there.
He's a busy bee. That's all I can say.
So you know what? There's two things that I'm, very fascinated with. The and one being, and this is, I've actually never had this discussion with a director, but I've always been fascinated about it because I've kind of been in a situation as an actor, and the situation could have gone better. But I'm very curious, you know, as you as a director, of handling nude scenes. Because we just watched the movie, and there's plenty of nudity in there. So I'm curious, you know, I never actually asked another director how they handle the, you know, those particular scenes. I'm sure, obviously, with great sensitivity, but I'm very curious, you know, how you work with your actors, you know, through these. Because I mean, you know, we're not, you know, this isn't PG-13 nudity. This is our nudity. So, you know, I'm curious about how you work with your actresses. In this case, one in particular. To walk through these scenes, because it's often, you know, sometimes a difficult discussion.
Well, I was lucky to have people who were very comfortable with that from the start. Obviously, when you cast these roles, you say that up front, you don't spring it on them.
No, naturally.
So I was lucky to have them I was just lucky because it was very, they were both very comfortable with the concept and the thing and the ideas of it. So I didn't really have to it wasn't like an issue. You know what I mean? It was just sort of like what they had to do. It was just the job, you know?
Sure.
I'm sure it was probably, you know, it was a little awkward, of course, but that's just how it is. So I can't say that I had like a lot of, like it was like a major thing that I had to like sort of work through. So I'm lucky in that regard that I was professional.
Sure,
as possible.
Absolutely.
That's the key to it. That's the key to it. If you were just a professional person and you don't like, you know, make your people uncomfortable for no reason.
Naturally.
You know, you just act like, you know, this is just, you know, any other scene. And, you know, and you have people on board who are comfortable with it. And, you know, that's like something they have no issue with.
Yeah, and you went from there. I think that there, you know, of course, yeah, professionalism is above and beyond, and then telling them everything. I think that I've seen both halves of it, of your situation of like, well, it's just what it is. We, you treat it like any other scene. And then other times there's a lot of discussion. There's a lot of discussion about that. And it's an effort to make sure, even though people did, sign up for that before, that it still remains a comfortable thing. So I'm always curious to hear people's perspective. It's usually one of those two. It's either, there's a lot of planning and discussion that happens beforehand, and then you just treated it the same scene. So it's always an interesting take to hear what the directors and how they handle the situation.
Right.
And then also too is you said you're a big effects guy, big blood and guts and gore. How did you work with your special effects individuals on the set? You know, how did that work with the planning process and maybe a little bit of prep talk, and how did that work for you working with them?
Well, it was very touch and go, like, because we didn't have, like I said, there was not a huge budget. So basically when you're on like sort of these super low budget sets, you have like one shot at it. Like you have one shot to make it work, because you don't really have the time, the materials to do it again. So that's basically it was a lot of hoping and praying that it would work. And I, you know, I'm happy that I had the people that I had, because they made it work. And I just, there wasn't a lot of like, you know, a lot of planning for it. The people, you know, Angel, Mainly, she knew what she was what to do and what she was doing. And, you know, we had a couple tests, you know, a couple test runs of stuff. And, like, with some blood sprays and whatnot, we could, you know, with, like, some of the effects. We did get a second shot at it, and, like, it worked out a little better the second time, so that was good. Yeah, basically, we just did what we did, and I cut it so it looked as good as it could, you know? It's a lot of special effects are made in post, you know. In a way, really, special effects are basically just magic tricks.
Yeah,
it's all about the illusion.
It is the theater of the mind. It always works out. So, I always love to hear about that, 'cause we're all filmmakers here and everything, and it's always fun to maybe vent a little bit. What were some fun, crazy, interesting stories that happened on the set and everything else? I mean, you know, give you an example. We had another director who told us about a TV blown up one time. The wasn't there, you know. So I'm very curious to always hear about the crazy. It's funny now, but maybe not so funny then. Kind of stories.
Well, I'll say that I definitely don't have anything negative to say. Like, no, like, real negative stories, because like it was a blast. I was very blessed with my with the cast I had and the crew I had, which basically the crew was basically me. And I had production assistant on occasion. I also sometimes had a boom operator. But yeah, it was a blast really on set. Everyone had a great sense of humor and was just with, like, fun people. Like, at the party scene, when we shot the party scene, everyone was kind of just, like, partying. Basically, I was just like, all right, party on. And I just basically filmed what was going on. I sort of led it a little bit, like, the beer pong scenes. I told them to play beer pong, obviously.
Sure.
And basically, I just went from there, you know. And then the sort of where they're hanging out in the living room, dancing around and, like, wrestling and stuff. I was like, all right, just party. Let's see what happens. And I guess all that footage is just, like, from various little things they were doing, like, sort of on their own volition. They're just having fun. Other interesting things, like, the house we filmed in was very creepy.
Oh, nice.
As you may be able to call, it was very creepy. There's just weird things in that house. That you don't know why they're there.
Like, what kind of weird things? What kind of weird things?
There's like weird pictures on the wall. It's just like the architecture is strange. It's like very German expressionism.
Okay.
The paint schemes are weird. The actor Nate who played the Beast. I did a behind the scenes interview with him, and he mentioned that no rooms seem to have a cohesive theme.
Just different rooms for different reasons and none that connect to each other.
The architecture is just like, you know what, fuck it, I'm going to have some fun here. All right, I'm going to try this, I'm going to try that, I'm going to try this. Yeah, all right, that works.
What was
fuck
the,
it.
What was the
it
weird was, artwork?
There was just like a weird, like, bluish watercolor thing of, like, a little kid in the middle of it. It was just strange. It was just, like, strange. I think Jordan, my production assistant, I think he took a picture of it, but I don't think he ever sent it to me. I wish he had. because it definitely was a weird picture. But yeah, I mean, in the kitchen. No, in the kitchen we shot and it was covered in grime.
Oh, man. Yeah, that sucks.
Yeah.
But hey, that house definitely added to the production value.
Oh, I'll give you that.
That's true.
That's free production value right there.
Oh, absolutely. The production value is always matters. So I got to ask too, man. Did you what's with the pillowcase? Did you just say this is the simplest thing, or, like, you know, was there an aesthetic choice there, or was it kind of just like, it's the simplest thing that he would actually realistically have in an insane asylum? You know, I'm just curious why you went with the pillowcase.
It's a mix of both. That it is, yes, simple. That's probably what he would find. But also, I definitely want to do an homage to the Sackhead Killers, like Friday the 13th Part 2, Town of the Dread, the Sundown, that sort of thing. I'm a big fan of the Sackhead Killers.
Fair enough.
So I just think it's a cool aesthetic.
It is
a cool static. I was just curious, like, you know, sometimes people are, you know, people are like, hey, you know, it was just around, so we just used it. The
a fan of Dr. Salvador from Resident Evil 4?
Yes.
All right, you're gonna get the remake when it comes out.
Maybe. I just replayed the Resident Evil 4 on the PlayStation 4, so it was like the remastered version, not the remake version.
Yeah.
I might get it. I'll have to wait a little bit, though, because I don't even have a PlayStation 5 yet.
It sounds fucking fantastic. Was that also a big influence on you growing up as well? The horror video games, and, you know, kind of led you into the, you know, the more fandom and creation?
Yeah, to a degree. Yeah, I definitely played some of those games, like Resident Evil 2. I played that. I played a lot of times when I was younger. I watched other people play games a lot, too, when I was younger. Like my... you know, my grandfather and my, my mom's boyfriends.
Okay.
Yeah, they played a lot of games, and I watched those as well. But I definitely played games too. So nice. I definitely played a lot of the horror games as well, and I definitely was an influence on me.
Sure.
Awesome.
Now people make a living out of what, you know, out of other people watching them play video games.
That is a market I'm sad I missed out on. If only I had the money and the tech back in the day.
Yeah, you probably would have not been here. But anyway, so anything else with production that, you know, like any surprises that you came across that you're like, man, that worked better than I thought it was going to work, or something that you thought was going to work and you're like, that did not work at all.
When anything works, period, that's usually
fair enough.
I cannot argue with that. It's one of those moments where it's just like, holy shit, that went off without a hitch. Oh fuck, what the hell bad is gonna happen next? Oh no, everyone get ready.
Then everyone check the memory cards.
check the disc. Doom format.
Did someone steal the crafty?
I don't give a shit about the crafty. Check the cards.
Yeah, the cards are fine. The second worry is the crafty.
Not if all my dailies are gone.
Yeah, it's true. Then we're all fucked. But anything that that really caught your eye that you were surprised that worked really, really well?
Yeah, I remember being impressed with something, but it's been
it's been a while.
You know, Yeah, it's been a while. When you watch, I probably watched this movie so many times that I know it line for line and scene by scene, but I can't recall exactly what it was. But I feel like this, I feel like that that tunnel scene I did, that turned out really well.
Yeah, for sure.
Because it was sort of like a location that it was hard to work with because it was all the, you know, it was just a hard location to work with. And I was so limited with my, with what I had in that scene because I didn't even have a second actor. Like I was supposed to have two punks get killed, but one of them did not show up. So I had to do that.
Oh, that was you.
So, yeah, that was me. I was one of the punks getting killed, the one who gets the axe in the back.
Oh, okay.
So not only did I have to act in that scene, I had to run the camera for that scene. I had to partially help with special effects in that scene. Like it was a wild, it was very crazy shooting that one due to my sort of limitations, but it ended up turning out really well.
Dude, I can only imagine how much of a pain in the ass that was. How did you acquire that location? Because that's one of the hardest things that I find when it comes to like making videos or anything like that, getting locations. Because I'm in the city more specifically. He's in the burbs. So if you want to film in public, especially if you want to do anything horror related, you got to get permits. You got to go through all this litigation and a whole bunch of other crap. So what was your process of actually getting a hold of that location?
So that location was surprisingly simple because that's my neighborhood. Mm-hmm. So basically, I went up to the guy's house. I think so. They were in their backyard having a barbecue or something. So I just went back out there. I was like, hey, can we shoot in this tunnel sometime? And that's basically all there was to it. Basically, I wasn't really worried about like the fact that it's sort of a public area, because I doubt that anyone would really care. You know, maybe if a cop drove by and saw something, he'd be like, "Hey, what are you doing?" But I didn't think that anyone would actually really care. So my main problem was actually walking through this person's private backyard, basically, to get to the location. So that was my main worry about that location, because, you know, it was sort of like a tunnel by like a creek. It was like right off the road.
Yeah.
Like if you look out of the tunnel, you can see the road. But I didn't think that the tunnel itself would be much of a problem. I was mainly concerned about the private spot.
Yeah.
But
it doesn't look like somebody's backyard. It actually looks like it's like a tunnel that's like maybe under a highway or through a sewer, and then it goes on to like this nice creek area, stuff like that. Like, backyard is not something that I would suspect with a location like that.
Well, it is actually I think the highway does go over it.
Okay.
I think so. But it happens to also be like right next to someone's house, basically.
So it's movie magic. You can make a lot of fun things look like other things.
It's all about the illusion.
It is all about the illusion.
I actually, you know, when the shots where the guy, the Jim character, he's walking through the woods hunting down the beast.
Mm-hmm.
Those are in his backyard. I just creatively used the trees he had in his backyard. I shot around it. So because we were supposed to use woods. The woods that I shot, the beast walking through the woods, I was supposed to just go back and shoot those again. No, not shoot them again, but shoot those scenes with, you know, Jim walking through the woods.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But like I said, I filmed this over the course of time. So I shot the stuff with the beast walking through the woods in the winter. And then when I went to shoot the stuff with Jim, it was the summer.
Yeah.
So I went there, and everything was way too overgrown to even get into those woods.
Oh, man.
Yeah,
And I was like, oh, shit, what do I do? So then we just went to his backyard because he had trees back there. All right, let's do it.
I'm surprised you had any foliage just during the winter, because I know I shot when I was younger, and I was just kind of like doing a lot of shit on my own. When we were shooting stuff during the summer, and then we went back to shoot stuff during the winter, we had no foliage at all. It was just branches. So I was just screwed. I was like, well, how the fuck am I going to fix this?
You really can't. No, you can't. I mean, and that sucks too. People don't realize that about like wooded areas is that like you can get into certain places during, you know, some seasons, and then you cannot get into the same place in a different season. It just can't work out. It happens like all that.
I found that out.
Yeah. And now you know.
So what was your editing process for this movie?
So I used DaVinci Resolve.
Okay.
Which is a great free program. I love it.
Okay. So you used the free version?
Yes, the free version.
Okay.
Yes. Too broke to afford that fancy version.
Yeah.
I get that.
But hey, I would recommend doing the free version, because I mean, the fancy version's not that much fancier, really. You can get everything you need done with the free version. But anyway, I changed the subject at hand. Basically, my editing process was I cut up the scenes. Again, like I said, I shot this over the course of a long period of time. So I went basically just edited it scene by scene. And then I think I used like markers for like the scenes I didn't have yet, like a title card or something. That's like scene 6, you know, I didn't have that yet. So I just cut each scene individually, put them all together. And then eventually, once I actually had everything I needed, I had like this big long timeline, and I could just sort of cut it all up, cut it down to size where I needed it to. Obviously, the first thing you do, you actually do the cutting, and then I did some color correction, which I did that myself as well. Basically, I did the entire post-production process by myself. I had a guy do some Foley for me too, so that was helpful. It saved me a little bit of time. I did the color correction. I did, pretty much all the sound mixing, sound editing. I did all that stuff too. Is there anything particular you had a question about?
No, I was just mainly curious what your process was, what programs you used. I've been hearing a lot of people are moving more towards DaVinci Resolve versus the Adobe suite. I think some people are just getting tired of paying for the Creative Cloud, which I don't blame them. If the damn thing wasn't so good and had so many programs to work with, trust me, I would have gotten rid of it years ago. But I work a lot in like After Effects, and I like to do a lot of special effects. That's one of my main specialties. So DaVinci Resolve just can't really provide that for me. So that's why I just stick with Adobe. But that was the main thing. Like, just what was like, what programs did you use? How long did it take? Did you have other people that you were working with in post-production, or were you just a one-man army? Because I know the one-man army thing. I did that for years. The only thing post-wise I don't do anymore is compose. Well, I never did composing. I just took tricks. But now I have composer and color correction. Color correction, I just can't figure that out. Everything else, I got down.
Which, ironically enough, DaVinci Resolve has the best color correction software out there. So
it absolutely does. So, Adobe's is nowhere near as good. It's tolerable, but DaVinci's is better.
Yeah. So a lot of people that we work with, you know, they'll do all their editing through Adobe, and then they'll transfer it over to DaVinci Resolve to actually get the color correction, because color correction is that good to the point where they're like, I'm just going to bring this to an entirely different editing software.
That, like you said, it's free. You could do all the color correction stuff perfectly free.
Yeah. The
And it seems it took a little bit to get the hang of it. I still don't entirely, I couldn't really tell you how to do color correction. I sat there and I did it, and I just sort of winged it, and it came out, you know, to be, you know, how I want it to look. For me, basically, when you bump up the contrast, everything looks better.
Just put that on a t-shirt.
That's that was my philosophy for color correction. Bump the contrast up, bump the colors up a little bit, and it's, you know, it's pretty solid.
There you go.
I think I saw that on a bumper sticker one time. Yes, I did. It's probably gonna be in your car.
I did want to mention my composer. He was great.
I was gonna actually. You read my mind. I was just gonna talk about the music.
If I remember correctly in the credits, his name is Matt Cannon, right?
Yes.
Okay. I was watching and I had to stop because a friend of mine is Matt Cannon. I went to film school with him and I had to pause. I was like, no fucking way. When did he start composing? And I looked at it. Oh no, it's Cannon with two N's. Okay.
Yes.
Because apparently there's a lot of people with Cannon in their name, and it all depends on the amount of N's in their name and the placement of the N's. I was like, okay, buddy, you got it.
Yeah, you actually read my mind, though. I was just about to ask you about some of the composing and some of the, you know, you got some very 80s style, man, with the synth. A lot of that beat's very much homage to those 80s classics. And I'm very much assuming that was an aesthetic choice.
Oh yes, definitely. That's definitely what I was going for. I was definitely going for like a Phantasm-y Halloween 3 kind of sound. I think some of the stuff sounded like a little Puppet Mastery too, which is pretty good. I love the score. I was very happy with that. I had a composer originally. He actually composed the scores for both The Night of the Axe Short and Spirit Board. So he was a good composer, but there was just scheduling problems. He just didn't have the time to work on the score. So I, you know, reached out to Matt. I knew he was a composer for films, and he did a great job. He just gave me this excellent score.
Nice, nice. The when you're working with your composers, you know, is it more of a matter of they look at the film and then they give a recommendation, or do you go with them with ideas and say, hey, this is kind of what I'm looking for? What's that process look like?
Yeah, I go with them for. Basically, I say this is what I'm looking for. I send them sort of samples of the sort of sound I'm going for. And it just goes from there. They'll send me back clips with the score over it. And I'll say, you know, how I like it. And, you know, that's basically all there is to it. They just, you know, sort of a back and forth thing where he just sends me clips. And I say, yeah, that sounds great.
That's simple, man. It's simple works. The I think Zach's got a great phrase. Just keep it simple. The it's a pretty good philosophy to live by. The so
if you keep things simple, you'll be so much happier in life.
Yeah. The so they always say that you make a film three times: once when you write it, once when you film it, once when you edit it. The you know, what was some of the biggest changes that you saw from it was a long time? This was like 2 years of your life. So I'm curious, you know, when you were all putting it together, the how did the film kind of change a little bit, you know, as you were going through the editing process?
So I believe the ending changed slightly. Yeah, the ending definitely changed a little bit. Like I said, the dialogue isn't one for one, of course. That's for the better.
Sure.
Some of the kills were slightly modified due to budgetary and time constraints and space constraints. The head, like the sort of head stomp kill, that was sort of an on the fly thing. Well, not like an on the fly thing. I sort of changed that like a little bit before we actually shot it. Okay. I was like, you know, let's do this. The head stomp thing, that was new. You won't find that in the script, because basically. I don't know if there's not a lot to change during the edit. Well, yeah, I did cut like some small things that ended up just not really adding to the film, you know.
Sure. The why did the ending change?
I don't remember exactly. I think it was again just like a sort of time thing.
Sure.
I think we were on a tight schedule, and basically I just had to get it done, you know, end it. So I don't think it was like a drastic change. I think it might have been like, there may have been like some police officers or an ambulance or something like that.
Okay, so it's a little bit more
in the original ending. So it was just a little bit more like an after the end sort of deal. But I feel like the ending I came up with was probably even better than what I had written, because it just sort of leaves an ambiguous.
The good old Halloween homage there. The whole shots of everything. So how's so what's the plan for it now? Are you going to be off to you know, Cannes Film Fest? You know, how's that working out with getting it out to the public?
So it's released. I have it. It's sort of video on demand on projector.com. You can rent or buy it there. I also, very soon, they're still technically in pre-order, but very soon I'll have the Blu-rays and DVDs out. I just got my test copies today, so I'll be watching those shortly to make sure they actually work properly. And then once they work, I'll order, you know, my bulk amount, and I'll be able to fulfill the pre-orders and, you know, have them for sale. It should be streaming soon as well, on a couple of different places. I don't want to say exactly where yet, just because it could technically not be, but I mean, according to Film Hub, it will be, but you never know.
Fair enough.
That's fair.
And also, yeah, I did put it in some film fests, a couple, because I don't have a lot of money to be thrown around at film fests. And for me personally, I don't know, they don't just seem to be that big of a appeal to me. Because I'm just sort of spending money to have someone watch my film and say they don't like it.
I can do that for free.
yeah. And I submitted to a couple. Like, I submitted to Trauma Dance. That's free. That was pretty cool.
Oh, nice.
Which is like Trauma's answer to Sundance.
Yeah, no, for sure. The Lloyd's Kaufman, Kaufman's answer to everything. The that guy's got an answer to everything. The I hate Blockbuster. The I'm like, you, yeah, dude, relax. The it's okay, dude. Like, you did set locations for Saturday Night Fever. Like, you're not outside of the mainstream as much as you would like to think you are. But it's okay. Like, it's let's take it down a notch. We added a little bit more moving out and, you know, into them. You know, what's the plan for the future, man? The are you going to be moving into, you know, I got an ambiguous ending, so are you going to be moving to a sequel, or, you know, what's the plan?
A sequel is definitely a possibility, though I don't really want to do a sequel right away. I'd rather do something else first. I have a couple ideas I'm playing with. I don't have anything necessarily concrete. I'd like to do, well, I don't want to do all these slashes, but the slashes are very easy to make.
They're
very, very easy to make and a lot of fun. So I do have an Easter theme slasher idea. Also, I'm thinking of maybe me and my friend Wade, we might be working on an anthology film sort of deal. So that's in the pipeline. Of course, the first feature film I wanted to do was Swamp of the Living Dead, which was a very Fulci-inspired zombie film. That was what I really wanted my first feature to be, but the budget just wasn't there.
Sure.
To make it the way I would want to. You know, I already sort of cut enough corners with Night of the Axe where I might not have wanted to, effects-wise and all that. So I definitely wouldn't have wanted to see what Swamp of the Living Dead would have become, you know.
Sure. It's an age-old battle. It's an age-old battle between, you know, budget and reality. You know, ambition and reality in that case, of like, you know, this is what I want to do and this is what I can afford to do. I'm not saying don't go do it, you know, because there's you can find out a lot of ways to do things, you know, for nothing. But that being said, it's still so sometimes it really just comes down to, hey, I just don't have the money to do X.
Yeah. So hopefully, I'll get some. The pre-order, the Blu-ray pre-orders are pretty successful, so that's good. So hopefully I'll just sort of like, because I do definitely want to hit some conventions up, sort of promote and sell my movie a little bit better. You know, I should have something coming up in August that I'll be doing. I also don't necessarily want to say that yet just because, sure. You know, maybe it won't happen.
Sure.
But I should be doing that. Night of the Axe is playing a Creature Feature Weekend on Saturday, which so that would be the 17th, I think. Yeah, so that's pretty cool. I'm gonna try to go to that. Of course, it was short notice, so I wasn't able to get a vendor table or anything like that. But I definitely want to show up to that and hopefully meet some people. Be like, hey, that's my movie. You like it?
Nice.
You know.
Nice.
But yeah, I. Conventions are definitely a thing I like to try to get into, because that's sort of what inspired one of the inspirations for my whole horror filmmaking thing anyway, because I was like, I went to a convention and I was like, wow, this is cool. All these people here because they love horror movies and they want to meet all these celebrities. Well, not, you know, they want to meet all these horror stars and stuff. And it's like, wow, that could be me sitting at that table, you know?
Our version of celebrities. The horror community is amazing. Just very, very friendly, very accepting, very, very good group of people, and they're always down to you know to watch your stuff and you know and promote things and be very good to the horror community. They always, I think every horror fan that's in that community really feels almost like a leader of an institution. Like they always want to leave it better than they found it,
right?
Which is always cool. I always wrap everything up with a question of the podcast. Where we go around the horn and we answer. I come up with them on the fly. I don't really fucking do them beforehand and everything else. So, as per tradition, the guest gets to go first, but if they choose that they can in fact pass, and we'll go around the horn and then we'll close this bad boy out. What is a genre of horror that you would love to do a film about?
I'd love to do a werewolf film.
I'm sorry, what was that?
Yeah, a werewolf film.
Nice, nice. Why?
Yes. Because I've always loved werewolves. I think they're like the coolest, one of the coolest of the monsters. There's something cool about a really big wolf dude who just like rips people apart. I mean, you can't go wrong with that. And then there's the curse aspect. You can do so much stuff with that, you know? And of course, knowing me, I would turn into like sort of a slasher werewolf thing where it's just like a body count movie. Werewolf going around, you know, killing young adults.
Nice. The you know, it's always the ones that have sex though. You got to kill those first. They So Zach,
shark movie. I know. Not a cheesy one, a good one.
Yeah, I know.
Cannot watch the cocaine shark.
I still have to watch that trailer. The last guy we interviewed, we were talking about. He told me that a trailer just came out, and I knew it was only a matter of time. I'm like, Cocaine Bear. Like, the moment I saw Cocaine Bear, I'm like, I guarantee either next week or not too shortly after this movie comes out, Cocaine Shark is going to hit theaters fucking everywhere. If not home screens, it's going to happen. We have Corn of the Shark. We were talking. You know how porn parodies are a thing? Now we have shark parodies.
Yep,
I'm
absolutely.
Sure cocaine porn or whatever the hell it is. If it hasn't happened, it's already going to happen. But everyone doesn't care because cocaine shark is a thing.
That is now a thing now.
What has the world come to?
I think, and for me, it's definitely like doing some type of action horror, something in the vein of Evil Dead, Doom, you know, that type of thing. Something just, you know, fun, right. You know, popcorn kind of action. When it comes to horror, you know, definitely getting back to the Blades and the Evil Dead and things of that nature, that a little bit more, you know, balls to the wall action horror. I would really love to be a part of that. So, hey, thank you so much, man, for coming on the podcast. This is your opportunity to look directly into your camera and let the good people know where they can find all your stuff and all your social medias and all the information about the film.
Well, you can find pretty much everything you need to find out about me by going to my website, facemailfeatures.com. So you can find a link to everything there, my shop. You can find all my films, information about all my films. You can even watch the shorts on there. All my social stuff is there. Facemailfeatures.com. That's where you want to go.
Nice and simple. I love it. Thank you, Sean. And I'll close this bad boy out. Thank you so much for checking out this episode of the Nightmares Podcast. You can find our podcast where all podcasts are available: Spotify, Apple Music, Anchor, YouTube. And also, if you could be so kind, if you are watching this on YouTube, to stab that like button, smash that subscribe, and click that little dingy bell to be notified every time we drop amazing content right here on MHN. And hey, if you could check out all of our great social medias: Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, and
Slasher,
the application for all things horror. Thank you so much, and we'll see you next time on the Nightmares Podcast. Bye, guys.